right, Howard. Well, thank you for being with us tonight on 20 Years of 24. We appreciate you coming on to talk about the 20th year anniversary of the 24 franchise. And we want to start off by asking you, how'd you get involved with 24? And why do you think 24 still works, 20 years later? I mean, the fans keep on coming. It keeps on growing in popularity. Our Facebook page group has grown in fans. And I mean, 20 years later, you wouldn't expect the show to keep picking up people. So why do you think it continues to work? And how'd you get involved with 24?
I'll start with how I got involved. And it's actually related to your question of why it still works. I mean, funny enough, I'd been at Fox for about 7 years. I had done X-Files, the first 4 years of X-Files. I did my own show. And then I had another series, which in fact was probably the leading contender in the derby that is pilot season, called Ball and Chain, based on a comic book. Okay. And it was a massively expensive a pilot. And Gail Berman, who was running the network at the time, it was one of her pet projects. And she actually wanted, truthfully, I was the second one. She wanted Joss Whedon to write it. And Joss wasn't available because of Buffy. So I was like the bridesmaid. And then Joss wound up rewriting me anyway. So it all worked out. It was all okay. Collegial and all in the family.
Yep.
Long and short of it is, we shot this pilot, hugely expensive. As far as I know, getting picked up, and I'm going to the airport. Literally, I'm going to buy my son, who's now 28, and who was then 8, I think a chess set at a hobby store. And I get a call from Dana Walden, who runs the studio. And Dana said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm just buying Mike up a chess set, and I'm going to go to the airport." And she said, "Well, don't, you're not going, actually. Gail is picked up this other show called 24. And your show isn't getting picked up. But Gail really wants you on 24. And she really wants you to meet Bob and Joel." And I was like, wow, I hadn't even like buried my own dead. The body wasn't even dead. And I was already meeting, Joel and Bob.
Right.
And they sent me over in those days. I think it was, we were at DVDs then still.
Yeah.
Sent me over a DVD. I watched it and I called Gail and Dana both. And I said, "Gail, you made the right call." I was blown away. Look, Joel and Bob created a show that I think worked at so many levels. And again, there are so many things in a pilot that can go wrong.
Right,
it can be cast wrong. It can be the wrong director. It can have the wrong tone. This was one of those happy. Well, it was, again, Joel and Bob were, are amazing. And they, and again, Kiefer was an inspired, bit of casting. There was a rumor, and because I wasn't there, it's only a rumor, but right. Apparently somebody really wanted Jeff Goldblum to play the part. So you can imagine that person. Now, it might have been a great show.
Sure.
We can all agree, if nothing else, that it would have been a very different show. Anyway, so I met Joel and Bob the next day at Starbucks Saturday morning. And I got to say, it was about as close to love at first sight as I've ever had in a, and look, it had its bumps, but they were so, again, it didn't happen right away because I wrote my first script. And as I wrote that script, it was such a challenge. But I've never felt connected to a show like I did that show. And I felt, I hate my writing more than just about anyone, but that was the first time I had it was the first time I kind of began to recognize maybe I found my home creatively. And Joel and Bob proceeded to like take me, really include, not only include me, but really took me on as what I like to think of as a third partner. In the enterprise. And it was really, I have to say, the best bunch of years creatively in my life. I mean, egos were really left at the door, and we all felt like, what is this thing? Can we really do it?
Every year
it was like, can we do it? And it exceeded all our expectations.
Well, Howard, did you grow up on TV?
Well, I would say it's amazing. I probably would have cured cancer if I hadn't watched all that TV.
Yeah, me too.
I was watching, Star Trek, big time Star Trek, like massive. But everything from Room 222 to Mary Tyler Moore, All in the Family, yeah. Roots. I mean, I used to be such a TV fanatic. I mean, I liked movies, but I always say I loved TV. Sure. And it's the same reason that television is like this. For some reason, for the longest time, movies were like somehow a higher art form, and TV was sort of the wicked stepchild or something.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Or the poor relation. But to me, TV has always been a very intimate thing. You live from week to week and year to year with your fans and with these shows and with these characters. And to me, I know Tony Soprano a lot more than I know Michael Corleone, for instance.
Yeah, yeah. See, that comes up in our conversations. We do a mix of cast and crew interviews and super fan interviews. And in our super fan discussions, one of the things that comes up constantly is the idea that 24 changed TV from the angle of going to a more of a film production. I did some research and found the only film star that had a pilot in 2001 was James Cromwell. James Cromwell had a show in 2001. And other than that, there were no other film stars on TV in 2001. You fast forward 8 or 9 years, and now you're talking Kevin Bacon's all of a sudden getting a show. And now everybody has 2 or 3 TV projects going at any given point. You know, Nicole Kidman's got Reese Witherspoon. Everybody's doing TV, but that wasn't the case in 2001. And I really feel, and it comes up in our discussions all the time, that 24 helped to elevate the art form. So it wasn't like, oh, I guess TV's where you go when your career's over, which, you know, when you see something like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that's kind of the theme of the entire film that, well, he can still do TV, right?
It's the waiting room for has-beens.
Yeah. All of us get to the end of season 1 and Dennis Hopper shows up and we're like, what? Dennis Hopper's doing TV? It was amazing. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I think you're exactly right. But I think what's interesting is a couple things are interesting about it, that one of which is that when you think about binge TV, I mean, it's this weird confluence of technology and also storytelling,
yeah,
and also of history. I think there are three like pillars of the show that answer to, you know, kind of also in terms of that ports into your first question, which is why is the show so enduring? It was revolutionary, and I feel so I feel not like bragging saying so because I didn't create it. Joel and Bob created this truly revolutionary idea that was so bucked conventional wisdom. The whole idea of TV, even just the mechanics of it, was people tended to watch every third episode of a Law and Order, for instance. So the idea that you were actually asking an audience to tune in and they couldn't really miss one and follow the story was a buy-in that they weren't comfortable with. And we sort of rope-a-dope them a little bit when they said, yeah, so this is not going to be a continuing story. And we were like, no, but of course it was. I mean, so it was like, you know, it was a little bit of a shell game. And fortunately, I think at that time, DVDs were the market exploded. DVRs, which then was called TiVo. So there were these multiple technologies that allowed the audience to play catch up. And again, had the show been launched 3 years earlier, I think the people at the network can probably answer better than I can, but I think we were a marginal show in that first year. It was not a clear, and Bob may have talked about this, but they asked us, Gail again, who was still running the network, they were not convinced that the show could continue past the first miraculous year.
Sure.
So they said, can you run an episode, a standalone episode? And we thought, okay, we'll do it where every day is 24 hours. But the pulse and the rhythm and the energy and the life of the show was real time. And that is the amazing dare and conceit that Joel and Bob created and that I like to think of. I became, you know, I may not have given birth to the child, but I certainly raised it from the cradle. And so I took a real pride and real ownership and real, yeah.
It's interesting how no one since 24 came on TV that no one has ever tried doing another real time show. Like, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's interesting, and that's another phenomenal thing is that Joel and Bob, when they first talked about it, tried to do a wedding. It was a night before a wedding, and this material, the idea of a thriller, is like when you think about it, it's like, duh, of course, let's have a ticking, let's put the Hitchcockian proverbial bomb under the table and go. Part of the problem is that really, I think 24 really did change the form, change the way people watch it. And also in a way, it just like real time just by itself may or may not be a good idea. It certainly is a great idea in this particular kind of in a thriller, a real time thriller thing. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, and that was a, you know, something that almost we thought might scuttle, you know, the show, because it was, and people, I mean, the conventional wisdom was people want to do comedies and blue sky shows.
Yeah.
And they grudgingly aired the show, I think, and they were stunned that it got the kind of viewership. I think we needed Jack Bauer in that moment.
Yeah. When I was anticipating 24, and then I thought, oh my gosh, what happens if they go, well, we can't, this is material we can't cover right now. But it was the opposite. It sounds like from your end, the opposite reaction. Yeah. Looking at one of the greatest things about doing this podcast is that I get to do a lot of research. And I went back through, and I was a guy who got hooked on the X-Files when I lived on a farm in the middle of nowhere, which is the worst time to get hooked on the X-Files. if you have to go outside and put out a campfire in the middle of the night, you're scared all the way in. And then I got hooked on 24. I remember traveling for business and being at the hotel at 4 a.m. going, I can just do one more, just one more.
I got letters from people, or just anecdotal stories of people saying, you know, you ruined my honeymoon, or, you know, or you helped me through chemo, or I lost 200 pounds watching the show and what, you know, on the treadmill. So there were some amazing stories, and it was, you know, it was profoundly, it was wonderfully, happily addictive. Yeah. And what's interesting to me is I have two grown kids, and I have a 16-year-old. Same wife, I hasten to add, but my 60-year-old had never saw 24, and he started watching it about a year ago, and it was so fun to see his reaction, that the thing really has aged amazingly. Well, I mean, you know, some of the technology, maybe some of the fashion, but boy, it really is. It was always 5 minutes in the future anyway. That was always an interesting thing, is that everything was a little better than it was back then.
Sure. And
maybe it's a little worse than it is right now, but most of it has come to pass. So it kind of feels very much of the moment. And it always existed sort of out of time. I mean, when you do the math, you realize that one of the fun exercises for us from season to season was, okay, you know, it's 6 months later, it's a year later, it's 18 months later. So often, if you really do the math, by and large, more time than a season had elapsed between the end of one season and the beginning of another.
Sure.
So technically, what was very literal about our you know, wonderful, you know, production designers, and was that, oh, well, 6 years. So it's like they thought it was like 20, you know, 36 by their math, and like they would be flying cars. We're like, you know, guys, the thing lives in a kind of limbo. Yeah. Don't take it so literally. I mean, you know, it was a very funny thing.
With the popularity of 24 and with it being 20 years, a lot of fans, you know, are always asking this question, but what are your thoughts and what do you think is the future of the 24 franchise? And do you have a status on how 24 is going these days? Like, is anything in development? I know you say you guys have been talking. So like, what is talking?
Yeah, I mean talking, and I, you know, I was telling you that, look, we're all very determined to not do it for the sake of doing it. We don't want to be like an old rock band that comes out and, like, you know,
one more shot.
One more shot. And I think we tempted fate. Look, I was so proud of the end of 24.
Yeah.
And ending a show after, well, 9 years with the writer's strike. So it was like 9 years of all our lives. And it was, by today's standards, relentless. I mean, 24, now you do like 10 episodes, 12 is a full season, whatever, 15. But to do it relentlessly was really punishing. And I was very proud of the way we ended it. And so I was very happy to put a punctuation mark. The truth is, 4 years later, I just missed the show. I missed Jack. I was having dinner with Kiefer, and, you know, Kiefer, we all, like, the fact that we still were friends and talked to each other afterward was amazing. But I had this idea. I marched into Dana's office one day, and next thing I knew, I was doing Live Another Day. Like, I got an order that afternoon. I was like, no, what did I say?
Yeah.
Wow. I was amazed how fast. And so that happened, and it came out. I thought, again, in the end, a couple of glitches, but we're very proud of it.
Absolutely.
We tried 24 Legacy, which I think, again, for a bunch of reasons that we don't need to dissect right now, felt like a Xerox, or not a Xerox, but just like it wasn't alive in the way this show deserves to be alive. And I've also tried other iterations of it. I've tried a movie. I've tried, collectively, with other writers and with other creative input. I've tried to do a legal thriller that was actually really quite good, but it still wasn't it. So the short answer is, Justin, is that when we are ebbing in, like, we're Fox, the will to put on the show again is high.
Right.
I mean, it's obviously something that we all want. No, everyone would love to do it, but it really depends on the idea and being able to be convinced that we're not going to do it just to do it. And we really want to make sure that underneath it, there's a real pulse. There's a real thing that honors the show's legacy and that honors our fans.
Yeah.
Wow. And particularly if Kiefer, and hopefully Kiefer could come back too.
And particularly Kiefer.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Bauer, I love that character. I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, I love Kiefer, but, and I think Kiefer would say the same thing, but Jack Bauer is just is a great character and played by and Kiefer's interpretation of that character was absolutely brilliant. And he was that can never not be said enough.
Sure.
That he was also it's one of those things where you just can't separate the actor from from the part. I mean, right. I can't imagine anyone else playing that part.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He did a wonderful job. Yeah. I think Kiefer was phenomenal. And I think, for a lot of people, Jack Bauer just provided like an escape, from life. He was the hero that everyone just loved to watch.
Yeah. I mean, Justin and I are both, we're in Canada. So we have the benefit of having Disney Plus that's added all the X-Files in 24 and everything else. I didn't think it's the proudest I've been as a Canadian, because usually being a Canadian doesn't give a lot of perks, but I thought for sure with the whole star thing that we were going to be left out of it. So when it got added, it was like, oh, this is awesome. Justin and I both have the sets upstairs. I've got DVD sets. I've got another loaning library that I lend out to a friend to get them hooked. And I'm still binging it on the TV in the living room, even though I could put it on my DVDs. I'm that hooked.
What's the are all 8 seasons or all 9 seasons on?
All 9 seasons are on. All 9 seasons.
Yeah, Legacy on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Legacy's not on yet, but all 9 seasons are on. You did bring up Legacy. My question is, what excites you about writing for Tony Almeida? Because Tony has come back and come back and come back, and each time it's compelling and it's well written and it's a lot of fun to have him back, even when he's the bad guy.
Well, everything about him. I don't know whether we had 800 actors or 7 or 8. I mean, something crazy.
Yeah.
The count is crazy. The body count is pretty crazy too.
Right.
And Carlos, I can really say, I mean, of all those people, he actually is a friend. I mean, he's become a friend, and I can't say that about, very many other cast members or actors or gentlemen for that matter. I'm a guy who tends to stay away from actors, but I love that character, and it was amazing how flexible and durable that character has been. And if I tell you he's died on the page 3 different times, I would not be lying. Been dead and buried 3 different times. Somehow, I think I can't remember because my memory is sliding a bit. But I think I think we've been variously successful at resurrecting him credibly. I believe one was a little less credible than the other 3, but I couldn't tell you which it was. All I know is that we had to work our way through some labyrinthine justification, but we shrugged and said, well, boy, the price of admission.
We weren't picking out the details. We were happy he was back. No,
I'll give you an interesting example of it. And I don't think I'm speaking out of school, but in season 7, there was a the bad guy, whoever it was, and somebody was bringing down, had hijacked. And
yes, too much. Yes,
it was somebody else, and I got into an argument with Joel. I can't remember. It was it was okay, the story, but I said I think this should be Carlos, and here is why. And you know, Joel said, you know, it's tired. I don't think, you know, it, you know, it, and at that point we just, I had to respectfully disagree, and he'd handed me the keys to the car at that point. So it was my choice. And again, I can't even tell you, putting Tony Almeida in exact, roughly speaking, in exactly that part, made it come alive in a way that was, that saved that season. And it was coming after what arguably was, or less, you know, I had a lot riding on season 7 because season 6 was kind of just, I guess, widely considered not as, I don't think it deserved the kind of.
I don't either. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah.
The worst episode of 24 is better than anything on. So sorry to interrupt, but yeah.
Oh yeah. I thank you for saying that.
Oh yeah.
So anyway, yes, Carlos is just a gentleman and a, and you know, now a really successful director. He's got a real career. So,
he's quite a few of the cast have gone into directing and writing and behind the scenes stuff, which is amazing. Certainly Leslie Hope is own.
This is Jeffrey Glazer, an executive on 20th. Well, I'll put him on just for, hold on.
Okay.
Jeffrey, I'm doing a 20 years of 24 podcast right now, and I Zoom.
Okay. I'll be back at your convenience.
No, I just want you to say hi to the fans. This is one of, this Jeffrey Glazer worked at Fox, and you're talking to, you have Justin, who's our number one fan.
Well, wow. I've always wanted to know who that number one fan was, but now I know.
He's here.
Thank you. We appreciate you guys, you know, bringing 24 into the lives of the viewers and all your collective efforts.
Well, Jeffrey was a big, big part. It was a giant part of the show. So I just want to, it's for the, for posterity. I'll call you back. I'll be done in a couple of minutes.
Well, have a great time. Okay. Bye-bye.
We are grateful to Jeffrey for casting three Canadians to be the All-American family. I think that's amazing.
By the way, between Kassar and Kiefer, I mean Leslie, and
there's a lot of Canadians that have run through the 24 universe.
Brad Turner.
I didn't know that.
Oh, Mylan Chalo. They keep coming. Wow.
Of all the lines that you wrote for characters on the show, what is your favorite? In the way it was executed, is there one that stands out?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I can't believe I even know the answer to this. But well, I'm gonna mess it up. No, it was the last line of the whole series, which was, you know, Chloe is looking down, at, you know, at Jack and giving him a head start while Cherry Jones. Is, you know, who realizes she sort of, you know, lost sight of, you know, her moral compass. Anyway, that's a moment where there's Jack looking up at Chloe and the connection between them and Chloe saying, she either says, turn it off or we're done or something. That's all. I can't remember what the line was.
Shut it down.
Whatever it was obviously me talking through my whole experience of the show. But there were, I actually have a lot. If I thought about it, I think I could probably have a bunch.
By all means. I mean, again, when we're hearing something, I was watching, Zero Sum, an episode from X-Files the other day as part of my research. I had to. And I was listening to, that was the episode where Skinner does all the bad stuff. Like he goes in and steals, Fox's, ID and passes himself off as Fox Mulder. Anyway. It's the one episode where you get to see the cigarette smoking man tremble. Ooh, and he took it, he gulped, right? And I thought, you guys wrote that. You guys wrote that, his reaction in there. And I think to take it from the words on the page to getting it done, that's got to be really satisfying to see somebody do it well.
Well, I think what you're mentioning is two things. One is the level of detail and thought. I don't think anybody really could recognize that. In some ways, I don't think, you know, it's kind of how the sausage is made. I think that's how much we cared. There was never a day that went by that anyone gave anything less than, you know, 1,000%.
Right.
And so that kind of, I mean, once you start getting cynical about it and you don't believe it and you don't care, it shows, you know, that's when the thing,
You know, one of the things is, as I was kind of looking through all the stuff that you've been involved with, unconventional really comes out. Certainly, The X-Files was not a conventional TV show. 24 was not a conventional TV show. But Homeland was not a conventional show. And the other one that I like, that I remembered, that I watched start to finish, was Awake.
Awake. Awake was really good. Yes. Oh,
Awake was the concept of waking up and having a different reality was like, boom, like just blew my mind. Still does.
You know, that's one of those things that actually was, I had a 10-month headache for that entire, that was one of the hardest things to do. And in some ways, yeah, but it was a, but yes, but you know, I think I'm a bit of a masochist, to be perfectly honest with you. I enjoy that. When I get scared of something, it tells me it's worth doing.
And, sure.
You know, then I always swear, let me just do a show set in a hospital.
An easy one. Yeah, you don't seem to really pick the easy shows to do that, you know, that have been done and tried and true, right? Did you have to wear a rubber band on your hand to remember which reality was which?
Yes. We had a color system for that. It was an interesting show. And in some ways, it's a whole nother podcast, but I always felt that a whole nother way to do that show that I almost wish I could do again.
If you want to do another podcast just to talk about Awake, I'm in. I'm absolutely in for sure.
Yeah. But interestingly, for the same reasons that I like those, both characters I felt were, you know, what I think about Jack about is that he really was, when you think about it too, was at a time before sort of, you know, you can imagine now it would almost be impossible to do that show for 1,000 different reasons, which is sort of heartbreaking on one hand.
Right.
Understandable on another, and obviously we're at a very revolutionary, we're in a moment in history and culture that is up for grabs, and so there's something still comforting about that show. And
absolutely, yeah. Like I said, I'm still watching it at 3 a.m, even though I've seen every episode several times,
and I'm still watching it too, rewatching it, and Jack is Jack is still in Russia, I guess, these days.
He's survived a lot worse. I mean, really. He's, you know, he's Chinese prison and everything else. I think he's paid his dues over and over and over again, for sure. What was it like to work with the world's two most lethal Mandys in TV history? Both of the Mandys that you worked with were lethal in their own way.
One had a moral core and one didn't.
Mandy blew up the plane in pilot episode. Mandy. Yeah. And Mandy Patinkin. Yeah, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Yes. So Mandy didn't have a moral core.
No. What was her name again? Oh, yeah, Mia.
Yeah. That is, I love that story, and her character and coming back and everything else is so good. So good. Again, another Canadian too, on top of it.
I know.
As well.
Well, we have to congratulate you on your all your hard work in TV, and we look forward to, you know, any shows that you'll be doing, and congratulations on your Sony deal as well. I think Sony recently announced that you're doing a project with you recently, I think.
They may have actually, I try not to read the trades. I don't know what's been announced. I mean, what happens is, you know, I've had so many announcements and nothing ever happens that I don't even like look at the trades anymore. Nothing good comes of looking at, I'll sure. try to feel bad for,
I guess how has COVID affected like the TV business and work in Hollywood these days?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that the profession, the industry really responded. First of all, it was the most confusing and disorienting time for the world, but sports and I think entertainment both very quickly kind of put into place protocols that have by and large been very successful. So they really figured out this unknown thing that we're all facing. And slowly but surely things have begun to pick up. And so, you know, for writers, I probably would have been stuck behind my computer for most of last year anyway, you know, but it's also introduced, Zoom, what we're doing right now. I wonder whether writers' rooms, you know, will change. You know, do you have to really, you know, travel across the city in traffic and then spend 10 hours at work and then travel back in traffic maybe you know, I think it's going to change like everything. Everything will look, we've all been changed. Time always goes in one direction in any event. But
do you think Zoom could have existed without 24 split screen format?
You know, until you mention that, and I can't believe that has never occurred to me.
I know a Canadian lawyer that might be interested in that, but I think the lawyer should get involved because I'm looking at both of you right now in the same way that I watched 24. Screen.
Very funny. That's really funny.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My last question for you tonight, thank you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us. Do you have a piece of advice for somebody who wants to become a writer in film and television?
I would say two things. If there's anything else you can do, do it. And if there isn't, start writing. I mean, it's like, I'll give you the one piece of wisdom which may or may not be, and so even though it sounds prescriptive, but it's like, get good help from people. Know how to have, on one hand, know what gets you excited about something and know how to hold on to it and protect it, but also know how to take in criticism. I always say it's like a cell knows how to take, you know, protect the membrane, protects the cell from toxins and from things that will kill it. Right. And it also lets in the nutrients. And that's kind of, I think, the secret for me anyway, who I consider myself a journeyman plus as a writer. I may or may not be more talented than most people, but I know I work harder than most people. And I can tell you, I've moved the furniture around the room every which way. So I know what, you know, when Jeffrey Glazer would call me and say, well, what if the couch should be under the window over there? And I go, I've already moved the couch there on the ceiling. I know what it looks like.
Right.
So, it's just, I would just say work hard and don't be afraid to rewrite, write and rewrite.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time to hang with us.
Thank you so much.
Guys, I appreciate your appreciation. Look, we do it. The only reason to do this is because people, you know, like you are still passionate about it and we appreciate that. And, it meant so much to us and it means so much to us that it means so much to you. So thank you for that.
We will keep doing it. Absolutely. The more we more we can pound the pavement, we're going to keep doing it.
And keep 24 alive in the public. Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Howard.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
You too.